it literally costs less to keep your employee engaged and to maintain equity and equality within your employees than it does to discriminate.
Welcome to The Audacity.
In this episode, we're talking about corporate culture. Hello.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
We missed you.
Immensely. Today we've got what I think is a really good episode planned for you. It's something we've wanted to talk about for ages.
Yes. And we do sprinkle this in time and again in our episodes. Yeah. But I think it was time that we dedicated a full one.
Yeah. So today we're having a whole episode about corporate culture and kind of what we see as all the elements to that.
Observers and partakers.
Yeah, I mean,
the culture.
We've been in it. We have hopefully a fresh perspective, hopefully also a research-informed perspective.
Yes, we were kind of born into it, to be very honest, coming from both business families.
Very much so. But we'll get to that. In the meantime, we have a disclaimer to make.
Yes, to our future employers, if you are listening.
Don't.
Yes. All views are our own and probably temporary, and we'll evolve with time.
Absolutely.
We are a cog in the machine, the capitalistic machine, and
we'll get back to that as well.
But yes,
you know, and also if you're a mid to senior level career professional listening and you disagree with the rants of these two young kids,
that's fine
as well. And in fact, let us know. We'd like to hear your perspective as well. You can do that on social media by commenting or sending us a DM. Mm-hmm. We'll check out all those things at audacity.fm on Instagram, Facebook, and audacity_FM on Twitter.
And all our social medias also have our link to Linktree, where you will find us on all podcasting platforms as well as Anchor.
Mm-hmm. Anchor's our lovely podcasting host. And if you're on their site, you can find a link to contribute, help support our podcast, keep things running, keep us in a good mood. Mm-hmm. And you can also leave us a voice memo there, maybe with your favorite story about corporate culture or your hot take against one of ours.
Or just general feedback, and we'd love to feature them.
Absolutely.
You're listening to The Audacity.
So to the belle of the ball, the beast of this evening, we have corporate culture.
We do. This is, I think, a passion of both of ours.
It really is.
You know, we did our undergraduate studies in corporate communication. Mm-hmm. This is something we are informed about and have researched about. And also because we've worked.
Yes.
Just have firsthand experience with
it. Taking business in high school, being from business families, all of that, I think, kind of led to this at the moment.
Even if you've never, I think, worked in a corporate job before, you also get exposed to it quite a lot through television and media.
Exactly. There are plenty of shows and movies and everything else.
Yeah.
Music, podcasts even.
Exactly.
About the corporate life.
Well, and there's an important function to that corporate life, having its own unique branding, and we'll come back to that right at the very end. But maybe first we need to start with some background about what corporate culture actually is. I mean, I'm gonna go off on my lecture now, so I hope we're ready.
Please.
But you know, in case you don't know, corporations kind of have their own distinct culture to it, the same way that groups of people might have their own distinct and unique culture to it. Some corporations share culture across industries. There's a high level culture there. There might be cultures for entire regions, you know, like corporations in the US might approach things completely different than corporations in Europe might. there's also a lot of more individualized levels of culture, how politics and team dynamics work just within a small department or division or something like that.
Or a certain company, even.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It might depend on the industry you're in. The corporate culture of a fashion company is going to be very different than the corporate culture of a law firm.
Yeah, or an educational institution.
Absolutely, or the public sector.
Exactly.
So yeah, corporate culture is this broad term of all of those experiences, icons, visual communication phenomena, social practices and rituals.
Yes.
All of that, which kind of constitutes
a
corporation.
From men in power suits to peons who open your doors while you enter the building, everything is corporate culture.
Your logo, your CSR outreach on Twitter.
Your identity, your values.
Absolutely. The way you structure your office.
Every mission statement of every case study you've taken in every business class in your life.
Yeah. It's corporate culture.
Exactly.
It's massive. And we love researching and dissecting it.
Yes. And it's very interesting, especially right now, because we are a part of it.
Yeah.
And I think that gives us a special kind of footholding in the sense that we can be critical to it.
Sure.
As much as we are implicated in it. Do you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And as much as we contribute to it.
Exactly.
And at the end of the day, need to participate in it.
Yes.
If you, you know, want to
survive,
make a living.
Yeah.
And also interesting timing for us to be starting our corporate journey while there's been a global pandemic going on.
Yes.
Where corporate life is seeing the biggest shakeup.
Exactly.
It's seen probably since the Industrial Revolution.
Probably. It's been hit really hard.
Yeah.
And because of the hit, I think the tectonic plates have shifted massively.
Absolutely. And we covered that shift quite a lot in the Growing Pains episode. Mm-hmm. You know, employees are faced with these growing pains, but corporations as well. And it's kind of up to us, the business researchers, communication researchers, anyone who focuses on corporate culture research.
Yeah.
To dissect
these elements.
And to figure that out. And, you know, there's several purposes to that. One purpose is, you make the corporation better, you improve the machine, it works better, more profits, more efficiency, better for shareholders. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves that. The other alternative, you're doing this for the sake of the employees, the consumers, the people, the human element, because you want to improve their lives because they deserve it and that's righteous.
Yes. So in a sense, this is a win-win situation in terms of dissection and in terms of analyzing and in terms of providing feedback, because at the end of the day, it is better for business.
Yeah.
Period.
The benefit of making any sort of improvement, that's why companies hire experts to help redesign their culture or shake things up or implement new practices. It is to spread innovation and improvement. Now, whether that helps the bottom line or the employees or the environment, like those things sometimes may improve for the common good. They can also be at odds with each other.
Yes.
And we've seen how time can factor into that, technology, whole lot of factors. And that's the discussion I think we want to get into right now.
And I think we should begin with, I think we're all cliches and all of corporate pop culture that we've seen, and that is the big 60s and 70s boom.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start our little history class now.
Yeah, I think that is where when we started to actually see what corporate life is.
Yeah.
Men in suits, corduroys and mutton chops, going to office.
Absolutely.
With females only being assistants or copywriters or receptionists.
Yeah, very much. I mean, this is the birth of modern corporation.
Yes.
That we saw, at least from this communication perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, corporations have existed since the beginning of
time.
Yeah, basically. Time. Catholic Church is the biggest and the oldest corporation in the world.
Exactly.
They probably hold the most wealth over all of them.
I'm pretty sure they do, yeah. All religious institutions, I would say,
yeah,
which don't have to pay tax.
The Dutch East and West India Company basically fueled the spread of capitalism around the world.
Around the world.
While spreading colonialism and a whole bunch of others.
And I'm pretty sure we don't have much of human history recorded because it was destroyed. But even before that, I'm assuming the Indus Valley Civilization, the Aztecs.
Exactly, exactly. So we,
yes.
Okay, we don't have enough time to go that far back in the history lesson. But if we start our story in the 60s with the rise of these modern multi-conglomerate corporations, and we think about the workplaces of IBM
or the mid-century giants,
law firms, big marketing firms, Mad Men, I don't know what company they worked for, but the movie 9 to 5, and we're skipping ahead to the 90s a bit here.
Yeah.
But if you think about Dolly Parton and Jane Fonda
and their high-waisted bands.
Exactly. just, again, like you said, sitting there as receptionists.
Exactly.
Because that was the first fight I think we had to struggle, was getting past some of these power issues.
There was a lot of power issues. There was a lot of politics. Business was not business as usual because there was a lot involved. These are the first corporations. These are, especially in America, the modern royalty.
Yeah.
These were the births of dynasties. The Vanderbilts, for example, the huge, the Rothschilds. I mean,
all of these corporations which gave us big monopolies, you know, media conglomerates,
these industrialists
were all growing in the 60s here.
Yes. And what we also saw, which we haven't factored in here, but probably this is a little bit of a digression, is these industrial giants also been plagued by the mafia, which were their another corporation within themselves.
Interesting. I actually thought you were going a separate direction there. Either plagued by the mafia or supported and brought up by the government at the same time.
Yes.
Think about Royal Dutch Shell Company or KLM or National Rail, anything in the UK as well. I think each company, each country has their version of these mega corps.
Yes. And the government also letting a lot of public entities be privatized.
Yeah.
And all of that, it sort of goes, I think it's a cycle, it's a chain of events and a chain of just hand-holding and each being supported by the other.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting to see that, especially thriving in the 60s and 70s, how that kind of shaped where we are today.
Right. I mean, living and working in those companies back then was a very conservative, very traditional, you know, you go in, you perform your labor and you receive your wages and go home. And at that time, that was fine because you could, you know, the breadwinner could support a family that way.
Exactly.
And it was this whole symbiotic relationship that led to the growth of a middle class, suburbanization, all of those things that were, you know, established but also flourishing in that period.
Yes. And that is when there was no notion of complaints at all from any party.
There was no anonymous hitline. There was in the mafia companies.
But yes.
There was no anonymous hotline or, you know, ethics review office, HR,
nothing.
A spokesperson.
And that is where the trope of, you know, bosses having affairs with their assistants came in, secretaries come in.
Exactly.
I mean, as much as we like to see them being, you know, the seductive vixen in the office, I'm pretty sure it was just harassment.
No, absolutely. And it's also the same time we're watching the Boys Club get established and we're seeing nepotism take its stronghold. Yes.
And this is, as much of an evil as it was, it was churning the capitalism machine.
It churned the capitalism machine and it churned the Western world.
Yes.
And everyone, like it or not, had to be on board.
Yes.
Companies and regulators adopted and had to adapt to this because these corporations were just pulling in the GDP.
Indeed.
So they gave them the space they needed. Universities realized, okay, we need to give them future leaders. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're going to start branding ourselves as the top business schools in the world and the top marketing programs in the world and doing early research on topics like that.
And then that's how then again, that's how the norm started, right?
Yeah.
That's how hustling became normalized. That's how every act, every emotion
yeah.
needed to be directed towards productivity.
Exactly.
Because your worth was in productivity.
Yeah.
If you're not productive, if you're not adding value to a system, then you're worthless. You're lazy, you're weak.
Yeah.
And
or, you know, if you're a woman or a minority, you're incapable.
You're
to begin
incapable.
With.
Yeah. You're not even allowed. You don't have a place.
Exactly. And then we get up to our first shift.
Yes.
Around the 80s and the 90s. And now, sorry to the boys' club, quite unfortunate, but you do need to let the women in.
You need to let everyone in.
Well, no, you just need to put one of them on the board. And that'll get you through the next 20 years of social
Don't
pressure.
Don't say that. Then only let one of us in.
But unfortunately, that's really how kind of the first stage of a shift towards empowering your employees mm-hmm. went. You did put one woman on the board.
You did. And then we forgot the most, the most prominent and imminent part of this culture, which excluded people of color.
It excluded, yeah, everyone else.
Everyone else.
Because they had, like we just set up there, a 20-year head start to establish things like mm-hmm. higher education and the middle class to continue to serve this machine
mm-hmm.
because this machine made money.
It made money in
unfortunately
enormous amounts.
Not for almost everyone who wasn't at a senior mm-hmm. executive level.
No.
Or a shareholder.
Yeah. And I think that is exactly how capitalism works to yeah. this day. It will never benefit anyone who's not no. taking advantage of it.
No.
You might think that you are doing the world a service and yourself a service, but no, you're not.
Yeah.
In the bigger picture, you were just doing their work for them to earn more money.
And it's a hard machine to fight back against.
Mm-hmm.
But people were able to fight back against it.
Yeah.
You know, we had feminist protests mm-hmm. about that to get them into the workplace. And the first idea about equal pay and breaking the glass ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we had equal rights initiatives that you have to start including people from minority backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have to even be an equal opportunity employer.
Yes.
The fact that idea didn't come into existence until just recently.
And that's the whole thing. It is because of the Bad Boys Club
yeah.
that these things were deemed unnecessary. Because
right.
Why would you need a policy about equality?
Yeah.
Why would you need a policy about basic HR regulations?
Right. Well, we say recently, maybe you hear that and you think 40, 50, 60 years, it's not that recent anymore. But
yeah.
when we just laid out the, 2,000-year history of mm-hmm. corporation organized work.
This is literally...
This is brand spanking
this
new.
This is 2 minutes ago, pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, I think got us to the next stage.
Mm-hmm.
This is when we started to see corporations care a little bit.
A little bit.
Maybe. We still had fur companies doing mm-hmm. their thing, but then PETA was there to push back.
Yeah.
And we still had energy companies do their thing,
mm-hmm.
but then Greenpeace was there to start to push back.
Yes.
And we saw manufacturers starting to do their thing, but then
unions,
labor
around.
Unions. And mm-hmm. we saw agricultural producers there, but then the farmers and the workers,
mm-hmm.
Labor movements.
Labor movements, exactly.
So it's always been, I think, the struggle of people versus profit.
Exactly. Them versus us.
Exactly.
It always has been and it always will be.
Because up until then in history, mm-hmm. all of any developments to improve work was just for the company.
For the company.
Now we're starting to get this idea of let's redistribute a bit mm-hmm. of our tremendous success
yeah.
to our people.
And I guess that is why there are so many businesses that are new
yeah.
that are starting to be the player in the game. Because in the 80s or in the 70s, if you think about a new company, they would almost never even be considered as a competitor.
Right.
Because they were incapable. They were never considered. They were not going to be a part of the club.
No, because it was all about past performance mm-hmm. and massive scale.
Massive scale, nepotism again, experience again.
Yeah.
For a, measly 20-year-old to start their own business
right.
with very minimal seed money,
yep.
unheard of, and will never be successful.
Yes. And then we're up to the mid-90s now. And the tremendous equalizer comes along.
Yes.
Technology.
Indeed.
The internet, the dot-com boom.
The internet boom.
And it gives rise to a whole brand new era of corporate life.
The modern business.
The modern business.
Yeah.
And these, you know, tech company giants.
Yes.
Which still took on the role of a giant corporation.
But
now they wanted to do things differently.
Now they were, for a lack of a better term, aesthetically pleasing.
Right.
Now they had nap rooms and women on board, and they had
in-house masseuse and therapy dogs.
And they had,
and you could take a slide down to the conference room.
You know exactly what we're talking about.
You know,
about.
If you've ever pictured the headquarters of Google or Facebook or Twitter.
They're in the middle of a meadow.
Yeah.
In the middle of a forest.
Yeah.
But in the middle of a city.
You know, and they spend just as much on the interior design for their offices mm-hmm. they do for their logo or that, something like that.
Yes.
So we see this care for people.
We see that they have abolished the cubicle and now there is an island.
Yeah. Because you know what? Now, we've already gotten used mm-hmm. to women and minorities being in the office. Mm-hmm. As long as they stay at the mid-level.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've also gotten a bit further away from needing to be part of the Harvard Business Boys Club.
Yes.
Because if you could code instead, that was fine.
Yeah.
That's all you needed.
Yeah. But having said that, as much of a modern, I don't know, industry it had become,
yeah.
as much of there are no more walls and only walkways, there are no more walking and only hoverboards.
Exactly. The CEO's door is always open.
Open.
Stroll in, have a coffee.
Wear jeans thrice a week.
This new corporate culture put its ills elsewhere.
Yes.
And this gave rise to the gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
In the cities and regions in which these tech hubs flourished.
Yes.
Or finance hubs or mm-hmm. real estate hub, any of these, you know, post Y2K corporations.
Indeed. When companies establish that their purpose is almost godlike, for example, the availability of internet.
Exactly.
Then they have the upper hand. Then it goes back to Mad Men 70s, stay yeah, in your fucking lane.
Exactly.
But
we're going to wear shorts in the office.
But we're going to, yeah.
And you know,
You'll get, I don't know, one day to practice yoga in the office.
And I can't necessarily fault them for that. Because
mm-hmm.
I would give up religion for Google.
Yeah. Most people would.
I hate to say it, yeah, but yeah.
Most people would.
Absolutely.
Most people go to Ivy League so that they can join Google.
Yeah. You know, and Google is one of those massive names, mm-hmm. especially for me. I grew up in the capital of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
I kind of felt the pressure of the world looking mm-hmm. at us.
Yeah.
There's movies made about this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We took a hippie lifestyle and we put it into corporate America.
And it worked tremendously.
And unfortunately, at the same time, well, fortunately for them,
mm-hmm.
they gentrified the area like crazy and raised property values, mm-hmm. which kept that as an attractive place to be headquartered.
Yes.
While pushing out the other communities who have lived there
forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, I'm not going to work there now. One, because I don't know how to code. Two, I'm not in the Harvard Boys Club.
No.
And three, I can't afford to live in my own city anymore.
No. And you know what the worst part of all of this is? They are, in a way, wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah.
Because they are still maintaining the same capitalistic values
right.
that the forefathers that they like reject loudly
yes.
Held, which is hustle and grind until you are ground to the bone, basically.
Exactly. Because nothing, again, at the top level had mm-hmm. changed.
No.
And if we look at what else was changing in society to accommodate this, right? We're still seeing the government provide incentives yes. and tax breaks. While we're having a bit of antitrust regulation going on, but it's not really meant to protect the people. All of our wonderful labor movements have kind of taken a quieter backseat because at least you have a nap pod now at work.
Exactly.
And it takes universities a while to adjust, but now they realize, okay, STEM.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give them their next
scientist.
Influx
yeah.
of, yeah, mid-level mm-hmm. professionals. But we've lost something important along the way, which was the ability of that single person wage to support a family.
Exactly.
You can't have a single stable breadwinner anymore. No. Mostly because you can't afford to live in the same city.
No.
That you're employed in.
You can't even think about having a single stable breadwinner because in the 21st century, not having multiple streams of revenue is considered foolish.
And this is not a Silicon Valley phenomenon. No. This isn't probably every major capital of the world these days.
This is a global phenomenon.
Yeah.
I come from a third world country and I know for a fact that if I were to maintain the standard of living that I do right now and my family does right now, number one, I wouldn't be able to do it without family money.
Exactly.
Number two, I wouldn't be able to do it with just one business.
Yeah.
You'd have to be having your hands in every bucket, basically.
Well, and that brings us to the most recent shift in our corporate culture paradigm, which is the rise of hustle.
Mm-hmm.
The hustle culture and the hustle lifestyle.
Grind until, I don't know, you make it, I guess.
And we've really taken the obligation of companies to provide for their employees on, and we've put that onto employees to put your hands wherever you can, get whatever you can grab, and work yourself until you can't.
And it's such a toxic thing because even the idea of a 40-hour work culture, a 40-hour week work culture with 2 weekends didn't exist until the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Where they just had to stabilize the industry so that everything won't fall apart.
And it's funny, you know, things like, you know, we were talking about this earlier, the 40-hour work week was actually a brilliant invention of labor unions. To avoid child labor in factories or people dropping dead on assembly lines because they've been working for 90 hours in a row.
But 100 years after the Great Depression, where 90%, I wouldn't say 90%, but a majority of the population are working white-collar jobs, the same model will never sustain itself.
No, because the 40-hour work week failed to adjust when we had our tech shift in the 90s.
Exactly.
And it failed to adjust when we lost the middle class.
Exactly.
And it failed to adjust when we started the hustle in the gig economy.
Inflation or recession, the model remained.
In fact, the 40-hour work week today tells you, work your first job during those 40 hours, squeeze in as much as you can into the rest.
Yes. And it is such a sad, such a pitiful thing to think that when our parents were in their 20s.
Yeah.
They could manage this 40-hour week, raise children, run households.
Right, right, right.
More than one. And now it is the norm to have 3 jobs at once, especially when you're starting out.
Yeah.
Just so that you can afford a house.
Exactly.
How sad and pathetic is that?
Well, and it's so normalized too. If you need an extra job, sure, you'll just start Ubering or delivering food or something. Working as an independent contractor, making, you know, pennies sometimes.
Exactly. And it's not just normalized, it's glorified. How many times have we seen on LinkedIn and Facebook, this person had 3 jobs while going to Harvard without scholarship, graduating with a kid. Bravo, kudos. No, I am so sorry for you that you had to go through that.
Well, and you left out the fact that they woke up at 5 a.m. to run a 10K, read a book, get a diploma on Coursera,
write a blog post,
learn a language, and raise a family.
Yes, while having 3 dogs. And that is glorified. That is what is considered the best, the peak of human performance.
Yeah.
No rest, no sleep, pretty much an exoskeleton working on caffeine.
And I think in these past 2 years, we realized how fragile that exoskeleton really is.
Yes.
So we got the curtains pulled back when they said, okay, keep that up, but do it from home in your pajamas.
My God. My God.
And then you kind of start to realize how artificial
and broken
all of this culture is. And the fact that it is all there and there's so many structures to rationalize it because it still makes a lot of money.
Exactly. Like you said, working from home, it was like, you know, in The Wizard of Oz, when they pulled back the curtain and there's no wizard.
Yeah.
That is what exactly happened. Now we had a whole angle on ableism during work because they wouldn't hire people on wheelchairs or stuff like that just because they couldn't come to the office.
Yeah.
Now what? We're working from home.
Exactly.
They wouldn't hire anyone who didn't have a specific residency at one place. Now what? Now everything's over the internet. Now what happened to that?
Yeah.
You know.
And now what? Are you forcing me in my own private home to sit at my desk from 9 to 5 every day?
Exactly.
And be productive while the world is shifting rapidly outside my door?
How are you going to police me in my own property?
And well, you will be policed, and we know stories about how people are policed.
And it's really, really tragic.
Yeah.
I would say it's a little better here in Europe, and definitely, our working conditions are much more normal, quote unquote, decent.
And protected. Yes.
And I'm very, very thankful for that. But the horror stories I hear from the US and
for
Asia,
sure,
I am terrified.
Yeah.
I'm genuinely terrified.
Well, and, you know, we're here talking about corporate culture and mostly how most of us will experience this as white collar professionals. Mm-hmm. But there's still a tremendous amount of strain put on blue collar workers.
Oh, absolutely.
To keep up with this modern world.
Absolutely.
And their lives are not being fundamentally improved by technology the same way ours are.
No.
Because there's just so much more demand now for them to be shipping us products and repairing our telecommunications and making our clothes.
I mean, with the most recent example of being Amazon and the whole union against Amazon. I mean, I see this on Twitter a lot, and it makes me think so much that it makes me kind of, you know, vomit inside my mouth a little bit.
Yeah.
How Bezos, ooh, that's a name I shouldn't be taking. It's like saying Voldemort.
Yeah, they're going to flag it now.
Won't, if he, you know, gave $100,000 away to each of his employees, each and every in every region.
Sure.
He would still have as much money as he did, or more money as he did in the beginning of the pandemic.
Jeez. Oh, yeah, yeah. He could throw $100 into every Amazon order that they send out.
Yeah.
And he'd be fine. I don't know the maths on that, so no. Don't quote me. It's probably not true.
But the $100,000 thing is true.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. No, but I mean, Amazon lately has fallen under so much scrutiny.
Yeah.
On one hand, they've sustained so many of us during the pandemic because that's now our primary way to receive goods at home.
That this is what they did. They saturated the market.
Yeah.
They were our only salvation.
Yeah.
And they then became a necessity to us.
A public utility.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, we know the ills.
The horrors.
Of their corporate culture, which is very high demanding.
Not only high demanding, it is cruel.
It is fundamentally inhumane. And there's, you know, stories like you said, which are coming out about all of their anti-unionization moves, and anti-unionism is a story older than corporate culture research.
Very much.
But another thing Amazon does is really leverage the tech, which was, you know, implemented to help empower employees.
And customers.
Yeah, and customers. And instead they're yielding it as a new
weapon
against them. I mean, there are stories about Amazon uses artificial intelligence tools to monitor employee performance and track metrics like how fast can you put together a package? How many bathroom breaks do you take? What's your walking speed and cadence through the factory floor? And they can, you know, aggregate all of that data and decide whether or not you're a worthy employee.
Can you imagine?
And your compensation will be adjusted based on that. And you can even be terminated based on that. The AI will write your termination letter without a human intervening.
This is the beginning of the end, I feel like. This is the most dystopian bullshit I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
And
you know, none of these practices have had enough time for the world to catch up.
Mm-mm.
Lawmakers don't know how to account for this yet. Universities are too far behind on preparing their students to enter into this type of workforce. Yes.
And it's still idealistic because at the end of the day, you're working for Amazon.
Yeah.
So everyone strives to fit into that box.
Exactly.
But having said that, it's also, I mean, also Amazon is very secretive about all of this. This is, I'm assuming, a tip of an iceberg of whatever the fuck's going on there.
Probably.
But this is such a, I don't know, it is morally wrong, but it is also just wrong, period.
Sure.
You know, even in a capitalistic sense, even in an ethical sense, any sense possible, I feel like you're just doing a disservice to everybody.
It really, you know, it really pushes us too much further towards end stage capitalism, mm-hmm. where the whole system can break down
because yeah.
there's just not people around anymore. No. They're dropping dead.
No, because machines are replacing you. And then that sounds so boomer. Oh
God. No, but, you know, we've also taken a pretty biased perspective here thinking about the human toll. Mm-hmm. There's also quite a large toll on the planet as yes. well that yes. all of this global industrialization
yes.
is putting. Amazon specifically, just in their carbon footprint alone.
Everything that we do from fuel to food.
Yeah.
We are destroying the earth.
Yeah. But
the thing about that is we're destroying ourselves. Earth will remain as is. We'll just die.
True. If you think about, yeah, what's going to go first, it yeah. will be the people.
Yes.
Then the profit, because there's no more people left.
Exactly.
Planet will be there just in a damaged state.
It'll just be another ice age. It'll start over.
Well, and that's what corporate culture experts try to do, is help companies figure out how to balance mm-hmm. those three tension needs.
Which I think is what we saw in the beginning of the modern business yeah. is that now businesses are conscious. There's CSR, there is D&I, there is,
yeah.
I am
yeah.
throwing in these abbreviations as if you guys all know what that means, but it means corporate social responsibility, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of conscious efforts into number one, saving face.
Yes.
And number two, actually genuinely bringing on to a positive impact of the company on, yeah, on
yeah,
the world.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and some of these activities are targeted at the planet. Mm-hmm. Sustainable packaging, fair trade sourcing, circular economy, all of those, you know, terms you've heard before. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are targeted at people as well.
Yes.
Equal opportunity employment, mm-hmm. employee liberation.
Employee wellness.
Workers' rights and new ways of working.
Yes. Even on employee engagement. I did my entire bachelor thesis on that.
Yeah. This is something we love talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did my bachelor's thesis mm-hmm. as well on employee diversity. Mm-hmm. And is there a difference between employees, companies doing it because they have to mm-hmm. legally, mm-hmm. because they realize it will make them more money, mm-hmm. or because they genuinely value human people?
That's exactly what I was going to say, because some of it is almost like jumping on the bandwagon and being performative.
Sure.
Because you see one big company do it, and then suddenly it becomes a trend. It's the cool thing to do. If you're not doing it, then you're canceled.
Yeah.
But you're really not doing it.
Yes.
You know, if the employees are asking for more, let's say, vacation days, paid leaves, do you listen to that, or do you just conduct a workshop on how to balance
work
8 hours? Yeah. Yeah, 8 hours exactly. a day, and prioritize your tasks
before you go to your other job.
Yeah.
Because you're hustling.
Exactly. So I think it's a fine line. I really do appreciate companies who actually give a hoot about,
yeah.
you know, and their employees.
There are plenty of great examples mm-hmm. that are leading that.
Yeah.
Of course, we're here talking about the villains today.
Yes. But truly, in a sense, I feel like these initiatives that these companies take, yeah. even if it is not for a humanitarian issue, if you just look at it from a business perspective,
right.
you're going to thrive. Better employees make better business. And this has been proven time and again.
Yeah.
Again and again and again. Every case study that we studied from a basic 8th grade
yeah.
business class.
Better employees make better everything.
Exactly.
And you have to know that to an extent. I'm talking to companies here. You have to know that to an extent, because you put so much effort into hiring the right ones.
Yes.
Then why don't you treat them like royalty when you are employing them?
Exactly. There is the concept of sustainability cannot be so alienish to
you
when you're only focused on hiring but not on retaining them.
Yeah.
Not on maintaining the motivation, on maintaining engagement.
Right. And we know from social science research, keeping employees better engaged mm-hmm. and more satisfied will lead them to be more creative,
yes,
more productive, more efficient. They'll have more free time because they'll get their work done mm-hmm. faster. They'll save you money on office supplies and telecommunication yes. equipment. They won't steal from you as much. They'll give you better word of mouth, which helps with recruiting and sales and marketing. I could continue.
Exactly. Literally, I think 18 of the studies that I referenced in my thesis
yeah.
literally said verbatim, if your employee is more engaged, it'll make you more profit.
Yes. And here's what it costs you. Investment in them.
Yes.
And investment in services for them.
Exactly.
And, you know, not everything comes down to compensation.
No.
There's a point in which you're overcompensated and mm-hmm. it's not that good of a motivator anymore.
Yeah.
But a lot of it just comes down to how you can treat people more humanely.
Yes. And especially these studies that we see emerging from the Americas
okay.
suggest that it literally costs less to keep your employee engaged and to maintain equity and equality within your employees
yeah.
than it does to discriminate.
Ugh, amen.
Literally.
Amen to that. You don't even have to like us or agree with us because we have the data
exactly.
to support this. And we know you like numbers, so you should understand.
Literally do a quick Google search on how much the entire globe is losing on racism.
Yeah.
Every year we lose about, I think, a few trillion dollars just because of systematic racism.
Well, and this goes back to where we kind of left our history lesson. Mm-hmm. Enough change hasn't been made yet at the top
no.
level. So many of these management decisions mm-hmm. are still governed by the Harvard Billionaire Boys Club.
Yes.
And so little of it is governed by all of this new research into corporate culture.
No, yeah.
Because there's a lot of arrogance and ego that also goes with leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a big corporation that has a lot of hierarchy to it and a lot of power mm-hmm. structure to it.
Yeah.
And you really look up towards the top.
Yeah.
They think they know best because they've been running industry for decades.
That, yeah. And also there's... I don't know, like you said, the pride comes in when you are best in strategy, you're best in innovative ideas,
yeah.
but you suck at execution.
Yeah. And, you know, that whole power network has shifted a bit recently.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, let the entrepreneurs, let the tech kids, let the startups, you know, lead the next generation. Mm-hmm. We're still going to be in charge of the venture capital.
Yes.
And we're still going to
yes.
pull the purse strings. So we still have our control over them.
Yes.
They can't support their employees too terribly much because that is taking our bottom line away.
Exactly.
Even if you're leading the most up-and-coming mm-hmm. startup and you have wonderful corporate culture experts, wink, wink, us, working for you, and you give them the autonomy to mm-hmm. make these radical changes, you still have to make a profit for your shareholders.
Exactly.
It's a broken system.
It always is going to be because it is based on capitalism.
It's based on capitalism and the way every other social structure around it
mm-hmm.
is just meant to support that whole process route.
And the seed of this, of course, was planted very much by the Wild, Wild West.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is just the Western way to live
yeah.
in a world. The hustle... The 9 to 5.
It's very surprising to me to see this culture even translate onto, like, for example, all I can think of is Nepal right now.
Yeah.
This, a lot of bootlicking, a lot of this hustle
yeah,
until
yeah,
you're
yeah.
ground to death just for peanuts, basically. And then there is this whole aspect of you're hustling because your company does so much for you. You have so much perks.
Yeah.
You know, you are getting free lunch. Whoa.
Yeah. And you feel grateful for it.
Yeah. But is it really perks or is it just human rights?
I mean, we're not saying that free lunch is worse than no lunch.
Exactly.
It's a good step
it
in
is.
The right direction. But that free lunch needs to come along with I don't know, better fundamental compensation, mm-hmm. better family leave time policies, yes. better flexibility
yes.
to have, you know, rewarding, fulfilling, mm-hmm. dynamic job roles.
And I specifically direct this towards the American working culture.
Sure.
Because you guys are like kind of like the blueprint to everyone else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I see the stark differences in European working culture here, because ours is a much more, I think, sustainable and quote unquote equal model, because I see the vacation days here, the paid leave here, maternity, whatever you say,
yeah,
and the perks. It's definitely not just attractive, it's how it should be. This is the this is the level of maintenance it needs.
Well, and it's far from perfect here either.
Of course, but of course.
You're right. It gives the maintenance it needs because those other social factors are in order.
Mm-hmm.
Like the government regulation has caught up.
Yes.
The middle class is stable enough here to be sustainable on their own.
The rich aren't growing richer and the poor aren't going poorer. No.
And there's, you know, a shorter pipeline between universities who are, you know, coming up with these ideas about mm-hmm. business mm-hmm. and implementing them here.
Right, yes. Right.
But at the end of the day, we're talking about global corporate conglomeration
yes.
here.
Yes.
You're only as good as the weakest link in the chain.
Yes.
So bad corporate culture anywhere will permeate to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you see all of these American, you know, success stories and horror stories
mm-hmm.
are influencing work and workers everywhere.
It's really tragic, honestly.
Because you need to compete.
Yeah. And that is what I kind of have that thing too, like the competition element.
Yeah.
As much as I like competition, there should be healthy competition.
Sure, sure.
To better yourself, you shouldn't compete to see who works harder.
No.
How is that even a comparative factor? Number one. Number two. Why are you doing it within your team?
Or not just who works harder, but any weird proxies we have for that. Who is the most innovative? Mm-hmm. Who is the most productive? Who's the most yes. efficient? These are all proxies for who can create the most wealth for the shareholders.
Yes. And at what cost is my exact question.
The answer, the people and the planet.
Yes.
We've been new.
We've been new. And I think it's very sad because us as employees think we're doing such a great service.
Yeah.
Whereas I think at 50, we'll wake up and think we just spent 3 decades slaving for a company that doesn't even care.
Yeah. And
or doesn't even value.
Yeah, it's hard. The institution will never value mm-hmm. the individual. You might have, and there are, you know, countless
mm-hmm.
amounts of wonderful people working in companies,
mm-hmm.
leaders that do care about their yes. teammates, HR yes. people that do try to stand up for the rights of their employees. Yes.
And companies having genuinely healthy work culture.
Yeah, and wonderful policies that are meant to support everyone.
Yes.
And even a few of the most woke companies who've realized we will de-emphasize our profit to yes. focus on people and planet
yes.
instead.
Yes.
At the end of the day, though, this whole epic saga we've been telling, that is a Band-Aid for a bullet hole.
Yes. There's a very famous Twitter thread or like a Twitter post that's going around that mm-hmm. says, if you die today, your employer will have a vacancy notice out by the end of this week.
I wouldn't even expect it to take that long.
No.
Before your obituary is up,
yeah.
you could be replaced.
My friend said one of their friends lost someone and the employer had a vacancy notice out in 35 minutes.
That is bonkers.
Can you imagine?
No. I can't imagine. And as a corporate communication professional
mm-hmm.
and as someone who wants to go in and work in D&I.
In literal corporate culture.
And in helping, you know, to improve and liberate mm-hmm. people and the planet mm-hmm. as well. It's a scary task.
It is.
Because no matter what you can do, we were kind of set on this trajectory
mm-hmm.
very long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
From the birth of modern capitalism.
Yes.
They knew exactly what the trajectory was at the time.
Yes.
Because they designed it on purpose.
Yes. Yes. I am. The forefathers of capitalism knew exactly where this went.
Yeah.
And they knew that the system only benefited those who controlled the system.
Right.
This will never benefit anyone in between or even a notch lower than them. They knew how the machinery worked. It is not even a machine. It is a bulldozer.
Yeah. Wow.
That was a lot.
That explains how corporate culture feels sometimes, though.
It does.
A wrecking ball from the, 48th floor.
Yes.
Falling down. Some people will get that reference from my former employer. But, boy. Okay. Not the most optimistic note. So then I'm wondering, what can we do? And where can we go?
That is, that question has a lot of answers.
Yeah.
One, as employees, what do we do? And one, as advisors, what do we do?
Okay.
As employees, I feel like we can only be strong and impactful together. This is not an individual struggle.
Yeah.
So don't think that you championing in your work is going to...
No, exactly.
You
can't
flip the switch.
You can't be the best hashtag girl boss in the world to combat this evil.
Exactly. So it's not going to work like that.
Well, and unfortunately, employees, you do need to work together.
Yes.
We've seen in the past how that collective action can improve your lives.
Yes.
But there's so many systems in place to prevent you from doing that mm-hmm. and to normalize not doing that.
Yeah.
Like not talking to your coworkers about mm-hmm. compensation.
Yes.
How will you find out that it's inequitable?
It's a great point that you bring up because that is such an issue in so many companies that I know, that not talk about compensation. That could be your first step. Talk about it.
Yeah.
Normalize talking to HR about stuff. I feel like HR is such a beast in every company that you don't ever want to touch that.
Yeah.
But why not? They are there to help you, literally. Yeah.
I've taken HR classes and these people seem to do nothing but care.
Exactly.
And want to help. And I'm sure there are plenty of shitty HR professionals.
Horror stories. Exactly.
That are just there to, mm-hmm. enforce the manual and reprimand and facilitate employees.
Exactly.
But I hope we will leave them in the IBM era.
Exactly.
I don't know the character in 9 to 5 who is like the chief of the secretaries.
Oh, I don't. I haven't watched that movie.
That image of an HR professional, I think, is what people still have these days.
Yeah, and they're not monsters. They're humans and they have a degree to qualify for it.
Yeah.
And as advisors, I would say to companies, obviously, we are very young and we still need a lot of experience to actually give valid advice.
Sure.
Having said that, I would say listen to your employees.
Uh-huh.
It is a two-way street. And at the end of the day, like I said, better employees will make better business.
Yes.
You cannot expect to treat them like shit.
Yeah.
And then expect them to work as if their life dependent on it.
No, and you're so right there. And you bring up something interesting that I said at the very beginning. Like, we are young.
Yeah.
We are barely experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And we're idealistic.
Yes.
But at the same time, we've spent just enough time in and out of the institution mm-hmm. to understand its flaws.
Yes.
And as soon as, I can hear the mid-senior career professionals listening to this being like, you just don't know how the world works.
Yeah.
Sir, we do know how it works. And you've been too close to it for too long.
You've been Stockholm syndrome.
To understand anything else. And it's not your fault. It was designed that way. And it might have even been sustainable when you were introduced to it.
Exactly.
But it's not going to be sustainable for many people for much longer.
No. And bottom line, in any institution, a cottage industry or a multi-billionaire industry,
right,
you're only as good as the people you work with.
Yeah.
That is it. And like you said, your worst is your weakest link. Pretty much.
We do know the weakest link. It's capitalism.
And the West.
We are not equipped to take those on.
Not now.
Nor is it possible without reshifting the entire world.
No.
So we just need to keep doing our best.
Yes.
To make incremental changes.
Yes. And hopefully we do see a sliver of it going on.
Yeah.
In
right now.
Right now. And it is very optimistic and we hope that continues. Any change as small as it may be,
yeah,
and as radical as it may be, needs generations of unlearning and undoing.
Yes.
And we are not going to say that we're going to do it in, you know, our careers, you yeah. know.
But that's, you know, that's the same advice we would give a company. Any yeah. cultural change needs unfreezing and refreezing.
Yes.
That's the lingo. Any social change yes. needs unlearning and relearning.
Exactly.
We can do it. It might be time, though, at some point, relatively soon, I think, we're going to hit a tipping point. I know young people are not enthusiastic about hustle culture.
No.
The same way that millennials in the early 2000s were.
No. And you know how people say, like, oh, the generation now, they all want to be YouTubers and yeah. Influencers. They don't have real ambition.
Yeah.
Yes, even I don't dream of waking up and doing labor.
That is
literally.
That is a radically new idea.
Yeah.
For, you know, as many hashtag future champions mm-hmm. there are plenty of people nowadays who don't mind admitting, I don't fantasize labor. I don't
literally
dream of working.
Yeah.
I don't have a dream job. I just want to be able to make and provide.
Yeah. Why do you think everyone wants to be Kim Kardashian?
Yeah. Because capitalism and the West tells us if you have that mindset, you're not going to be successful because you won't fit in with our institutions.
Exactly. And
but I'm a bit hopeful that enough of those people might make some change someday.
Hopefully. And we'll be a part of it.
Or we just have to wait till our spirits get broken too. But
oh, everyone in my generation is experiencing a burnout. So I think we're very much there.
Yeah. Maybe it's time for our modern labor movement.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. We'll try our best as you know, communication experts.
I mean, after the pandemic hit, I think anything is possible.
Yeah.
Revolutions, movements.
Yeah.
Maybe the guillotine returns. I don't know.
Works for me. But yeah.
I think it's a good note to end the episode on.
I agree. I'm really curious to see.
Yes. That's the word.
How we did with this analysis.
Yeah.
This history lesson.
Yeah.
It's fun, I think, for us to bring our education and, yes. and our science in.
I think it's been a while since we weren't this obnoxious with what we studied.
Hopefully.
But, yeah.
But
no, yeah. But that's a good note that you're ending on. I'm curious to see what the world is going to look like in 20 years when we're, you know, very much stale in our career.
Yeah. Then we'll be the ones who have been too deep into the system to have a
yeah,
unbiased opinion
exactly.
anymore.
And I really want to see how that goes.
I also need to see if you've been listening to, let us know, you know, how well did we get it? Are we off yeah. base for how the rest of the world works? Are we really focusing too much on the West here, which is what we probably are doing?
Probably.
Is it completely different in your industry? Is it completely different mm-hmm. part in your career, which you're in?
And this might be, and like you said, we focused very much on mid to leadership level.
Yeah.
We didn't even focus on entry level, low level, blue collar.
Yeah.
That is a whole nother entity that we don't have any idea on.
Absolutely.
And even unions, for example, they are, you know, most of them are controlled by
yeah.
crime organizations. Well,
and you know what? It's not our fault that we don't have any insights to touch on that.
No.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because the research is focusing
yes.
on how to improve white collar corporations so they can make more money so they can support the cycle.
This is Stanford prison experiment all over again. Zimbardo.
I don't know if we're the prisoners, the guards, the researchers. I think we're just like the cell bars.
I think so too.
Oh no.
All right.
Thanks
for listening. This was a good venting session.
Absolutely.
We enjoyed this very, very much. And
if you enjoyed it too, let us know online on social media at audacity.fm or on Twitter at audacity_FM.
All our social medias have the Linktree link, which links to all podcasting platforms. I am stumbling in my own tongue.
Capitalism really took you out today.
It did. 1, 2, 3 punch. so there is Linktree on our bios where you can find us on all podcasting platforms and also on Anchor.
And while you're on Anchor, you'll find options to support our show. We can mm-hmm. keep bringing you interesting content if you make a contribution. And you can also leave us a voice note or a voice memo there. Give us some feedback. Tell us your weirdest office politics story. give us your thoughts for how to lead the next labor yeah. movement. And we would love to feature that on a future episode.
Indeed. That's it, folks.
Stay tuned. We've got another great one coming at you next week.
Bye.